Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business, where we believe in the free market and we celebrate the entrepreneurial spirit. And we try to present business practices and principles that will be of help to you no matter where you are in your career. We have a great guest today. Dr. John Barge is the Georgia State School Superintendent. You may wonder, why would a business program be talking to a state school superintendent? Well, listen, we don't run businesses in a vacuum. We're all part of our community. And for most businesses, as the community goes, their business goes, and education is a huge part of that community. Dr. Barge, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, Eddie. Thank you very much. And to your point, I have always said that education is the number one economic development tool that any community or state has. So it goes right in line with what you're saying.
Well, great. Dr. Barge, for our listeners that may not know exactly what it is you spend your day doing, can you tell us what the Georgia State School Superintendent does?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess my day is spread between meetings. In some cases, it may be with policymakers. In some cases, it may be with stakeholders in the form of leaders, superintendents, principals. It could be parents. It could be visiting schools. I spend quite a bit of time out visiting schools, seeing how different initiatives that we are implementing are taking place. Working with the budget, you know, how are we going to continue to provide services with budget cuts and that type of thing, you know. There's a whole litany of things that we do there.
Dr. Barge, I know that you're aware of this, but recent reports from Education Week place Georgia number 7th nationally in overall academic scores, and number one in connecting education in the workforce, which I think they call a transition rating.
Yes, sir, that's exactly right. And I am so glad you are the first media person, Eddie, that I have seen that has taken that and actually repeated it and put it out there on the Air Force. And thank you very much. But yes, Education Week has ranked Georgia's quality of Georgia's educational system 7th in the nation, and that is based on about 129 different indicators that they grade every state system on, and all of those scores on all those indicators roll up into a single score, and Georgia's score was a B+, which put us 7th in the nation. But within that category of transitions, we were actually first in the nation and the only state they've ever given a score of 100 to in that particular category, so we're very pleased.
Dr. Barge, I guess a good question is, how did you go about, or how did the state go about improving these rankings? How do we get there?
Well, in the particular area of transitions, we have a very solid group at the state level that is, we call the Alliance of Education Agency Heads. And so we collaborate together and work together between the Department of Early Care and Learning, the DOE, then the technical college system, the university system, to make those transitions in that education continuum a smooth one, but also the work that we're doing here that links and provides the relevancy of the academic rigor to careers and to the workplace. You know, how is what I'm learning in school relevant? How can I use what I'm learning to be successful? And again, it's getting at that economic development piece. And you know, it's what are we doing as a K-12 system to ensure that our children are ready to be successful, whether they're going to college or whether they're going into the world of work? And so I think that focus has really earned us a lot of attention across the nation.
It certainly has. I just know from even talking to other state office holders, even the governor himself, that the education part of Georgia is a big draw for businesses coming here. And we've been fairly successful as a state in attracting industry to our state recently, which, of course, helps all of us in many ways, not the least of which is providing jobs for a lot of people around here. For those of us that like me, that are small business people, I know that that a lot of these rankings mean a great deal to professional educators, but I you've already answered this partially, but I just want to reiterate to our listeners why these rankings matter to those of us that are not education professionals, but rather people that live in the community, work, and run businesses in the community.
Well, I think it's important to look at the rankings and look at the information behind the rankings, which I think that you've done a pretty good job with already, based on what I've heard. And to get all of the information, because sometimes rankings are based on partial information, and it's very helpful to know all of the details behind it. But, you know, it's important to know that because, real estate agents, it's important for them to know how well their schools are performing in their communities as they maybe attempt to lure new residents to an area for people to buy homes, and how strong are the schools and what are their strong points and what do they offer. Do we have the workforce capacity here, let's say, to provide the needed workforce in the future for, let's say, a Kia automotive manufacturing plant in LaGrange or for the port in Savannah? You know, are we going to be able to maintain a supply of workers for our economy? So yeah, I think it's important to know those things.
I think you're right. If we look to another side of the coin, I'm not picking on these people, but it's been in the news recently. You know, the city of Detroit and all the problems they've had. I think the thing that's most distressing to me about the city of Detroit is, and this was in several papers, that the city of Detroit has a literacy rate of 47%, which means more than half of the people of Detroit don't meet basic literacy standards. Dr. Barge, I was on a mission trip into the West African country of Mali here not too long ago, and Mali, one of the poorest countries on this planet, has a literacy rate of 46%, just 1% below what the city of Detroit. What does it tell us when we in our country, when we have a major city that has a literacy rate comparable to that of a third world country?
Well, I think what we can learn from that or glean from that is that in that particular community, there is not a strong value placed on education. In some cases, when you look at that type of issue, there's a culture within a community that doesn't necessarily see education as valuable. And trying to combat that only from the one-sided view of, let's say, the local school system trying to change that, it's very hard to change. You have within your area, I do believe, one of the strongest testaments of a community coming together to change its culture that I have ever seen, and that's down in Camilla at Mitchell County High School. They have done a phenomenal job changing their culture and their community over time, and they have seen some incredible results that are far outpacing the state average in many cases, and we're very proud of them.
Dr. Barge, we talk on this program a lot, and we've had a lot of guests that have made this point several times, that even in business, I know it's very easy to think of businesses as being kind of sterile as regards to culture or values, but over and over again, it's proven businesses long-term that have value and add value to the community and that are what we would term successful businesses have a culture of values behind them. And if you take those values away, the business simply ceases to exist. You may not know that there's an author named Jim Collins who wrote a book called Good to Great. It's a very, very well-known business book.
Yes, sir.
And Jim states in a couple of his books that the overriding factor of success in a business as regards to the leader of that business is that the leader is not arrogant, that the leader is willing to look down and learn. Well, arrogance is, and lack of arrogance is, a cultural phenomenon. I'm glad to hear you say that about, because I agree with you. When I look at something like Detroit, it almost looks overwhelming to me. I mean, I don't know if somehow I was suddenly placed in charge of that system, not that that's ever going to happen, but if I were, I don't know what in the world you do to start, but I think you hit the nail on the head. You start with the culture.
And you include that community, because a school cannot do it by itself. And that's the thing that that Mitchell County has done down there that has really earned them such incredible results. You know, your teachers down there have taken on you know, working with parents in such a way that there's no excuses for them. Poverty is not an excuse. It's certainly a challenge, and it presents its own set of unique circumstances, but they are certainly not it's not unable to, you're not unable to overcome them. So it's the community and the culture that can only be changed if you approach it together. A one-sided attack simply coming from the school is not going to get you the same kinds of results that you get if you have your whole community behind this effort to change the culture and value what education can offer its children.
Dr. Barge, we're coming up on a break. After the break, I'd like to talk to you specifically about a fairly recent experience that I had down in Calhoun County.
Okay, great.
Coming back, that our church got involved with a school down there, and it was eye-opening for me, and I'd be interested in hearing your opinion of that. We are, for the listeners, we are being streamed live on biz1190.com, and a podcast of today's program will be available on eddiemayfield.com. That's E-D-D-I-E, mayfield.com. So tune in there. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We're talking with Dr. John Barge. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I am Eddie Mayfield. As we always say, I may not have the best radio voice on the air, but I have the perfect face for it. So we're glad you're back with us. We're talking with Dr. John Barge, the Georgia State School Superintendent. Dr. Barge, just before the break, I was telling you, our church, through the leadership of one of our ministers, who actually just saw an article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution about some problems that a school was having down in Calhoun County. And he got a bunch of us together, and we went down. The school, very nice folks down there, very nice folks, mostly an African-American school. The folks had, but they just didn't have some funds they needed. So we went down, our church went down and did a lot of improvements to the property down there and helped them with just supplies and so forth. I'd never had even thought about a church doing something like that for a school before. I'm just wondering, as the head of the Department of Education here in Georgia, what you think about that?
I think it's great. That gets back to the point that I made earlier on the show about the importance of the entire community coming together to change the culture. And I think it's an absolute wonderful thing that you guys did, and we need to see more of that type of cooperation between our faith-based groups and schools to better the situation for students in the community.
You know, one of the things they had done, we had been told by some of the guidance counselors down there that some of these students graduating from this school, they had never even been outside the county and really didn't know some of the, or at least didn't fully grasp some of the opportunities that might await them in other areas of Georgia. And we actually paid for a bus down there to take them over to some of the technical schools over in Albany and a few other places, just to get them to look around and see what else might be in the world that they could do. And it's been a very rewarding experience, and I'm very glad that we did that. Again, I'd never done that before. I'd never thought about it, and it wasn't my idea. It was one of our pastors here at our church.
That's a great idea, and that idea, that concept of students not leaving their county, that's not even limited to our rural counties. We have children in poverty and situations here within the urban and suburban areas of our state where they haven't left their home communities, and that's not that uncommon. But there is tremendous value in students doing that, because there's a lot that they learn just by experience. And so I applaud you guys for doing that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Barge, I realize that as head of the Department of Education here in Georgia, you have to lobby for money from the state legislature, if I can get that out. Many citizens, including some of us that manage businesses, can we can at times, to be kind about it, be a bit skeptical about the formula that says more money automatically equals a better education. So I was going to ask you, from your unique perspective, are you pleased with funding in the state of Georgia for education?
Oh, that's a double-edged sword there, but I would have to say at this particular point, no. You know, when you look at the hard facts about where we are currently with funding, two-thirds, we have 180 school districts in this state. 121 of them are in school less than 180 days, which is the state minimum. That's because they can't afford to keep their doors open. You have over 4,400 teachers in the last 5 years who have lost their jobs. You have furlough days, the shortened school calendars. You have larger class sizes, which in and of itself, a larger class size, depending on the age group, may or may not be a large issue, but it can be. So the fact that over the last five-plus years, the local school districts in this state have not received over $5 billion that they've earned from the state funding formula. This is not just money. This is money that they earned through a formula that was developed in 1984 and has never been updated for inflation.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a real issue there with funding. A full 60 of our school districts are in deficit spending. You know, that's a real issue. That's a real problem.
You know, despite that, you've done a great job because, I mean, like as we said at the beginning of the program, Georgia, in almost every measurement, things are improving. So I guess you'd have to say you're doing that in spite of the fact that you lack funding.
Yes, sir. I say that quite frequently. I am absolutely honored to be the superintendent for this state, and the teachers and leaders in this state are working so incredibly hard. When you look back at 2012, Georgia was the only state in the entire nation that saw gains in student achievement on every national test that we administer consistently across the country. And, you know, the national average SAT score went down 2 points and Georgia's went up 7.
Wow.
That's huge. That's a very significant gain. But, and people say, well, you know, if you're doing that without all this money, then do you really need all this money? And the answer is, you know, at some point in business, you probably understand the point of diminishing returns.
Right.
At some point, we're going to put one too many things on that the backs of the teachers, and we start to lose morale and we start to digress. And I really don't want that to happen.
Dr. Barge, people tend to be very supportive of teachers. A lot of my good friends are teachers, particularly in the Gwinnett County school system, and they're very dedicated people, and they care about kids. I mean, I talk to them all the time, and I know this firsthand that they do that. We do read, though, sometimes about, honestly, I have to be honest, the teachers where I've read this recently has not been inside Georgia, but we do read where teachers, for whatever reason, are not doing a good job. What do you do about that?
Well, and that I think that would be true in any occupation.
Sure.
Always going to have some
sure.
folks who aren't doing the best. But quite frankly, our children's futures are not something that we really have time to play with. And that's why I'm very excited to have a new teacher and leader evaluation system coming on board that we can measure and know the effect that a teacher is having on a child. I think what we're going to find is that we have a lot of really strong teachers, and maybe we have some that aren't so strong. And we need to help those folks find the areas that they are strong in and help point them in that direction.
Are teachers' unions an issue here in Georgia? Is that an issue here in Georgia, or is that mainly something out of our area?
No, it is not an issue. Georgia does not have teacher unions at all.
Great. You know, I'm glad to hear you talk about the accountability side. One of the, as you know, a lot of us in business, and I will admit quickly that probably incorrectly very often, we think that sometimes in a public arena, what's lacking there is accountability. Because in business, whether you like it or not, you end up being accountable because, you know, if you don't treat a customer right, they will just go somewhere else and you won't have a business. So it's sort of self-correcting. And I'm glad to hear you say that. Not that I think there are a lot of bad teachers. I happen not to think that. Most I know are very good, but we always do like to hear that when you do find a bad apple, you're trying to do something about it because it's like you said, you're gambling with some poor kid's poor kid's education there.
Absolutely. I recall my days of being a principal, and I understood fully the idea of teacher tenure and what that meant. And as a principal, if I was not absolutely 100% positive that this teacher was the best thing for my kids in my school, I would not continue to employ them if it meant that employment meant that they were awarded tenure.
I really like the fact that you're not just a politician. You in fact have a teaching background. That's something I do admire about you, and I think it plays out into your professional life. We're talking with Dr. John Barge. You're on Driven to Business with Eddie Mayfield, and we'll be back in just a moment. Stick around. Welcome back to this session of Driven to Business. I am Eddie Mayfield, your host. Keep in mind, we are streaming live on biz1190.com and a podcast of today's program on eddiemayfield.com. We're heard every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock here right on Biz 1190 AM. We're talking with Dr. John Barge. Dr. Barge, let me ask you a quick question here. What are you, as a professional educator and as head of the Georgia school system, what's your take on homeschoolers? What's your opinion of that?
Well, I think homeschooling is certainly an option that is the appropriate option for a number of our parents and our students. I think that there is not a one-size-fits-all program out there, and I think as many choices that we have for our young people, if the parents think that's the right thing for their child, then absolutely. So I'm totally supportive of homeschooling.
You know, I was reading on there's a website, and this is not a Georgia website. It's the HSLDA, so Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which has some problems in some other states, but has nothing bad to say about Georgia at all. But they make the point. They make that point in there, and they're quoting a Rudner study how that homeschoolers generally tend to do better on some tests than public schools, but they actually back off that and say something pretty common sense. They say that's because part of that may have to do with the fact that homeschoolers tend to come from families where the income's relatively high, where the marriages are intact, and where a dedication to education is very strong. And they're saying, you know, that really if you put these same kids in a public school, they probably would also do pretty well. And so what they basically say is we're not criticizing any other form of education. We just think that there are some people who do better in homeschool environments, and we want the freedom to do that. That's really their whole, especially what you just said.
Right.
Be honest about it.
I would agree.
Georgia, and we mentioned earlier, Georgia has been in the business news recently as one of the best places in the country to operate and start a business. And we're ranked number one in workforce availability. And I'm basically setting a golf ball on the tee here for you to knock out, to hit the fairway. I know that. But what does that have to do with public education in Georgia?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with public education. But, you know, we have a strong partnership and alliance between ourselves and the Technical College System of Georgia and the University System of Georgia. And I think it says to business and industry that we're working together to ensure that we have not only an educated workforce, but a skilled workforce. And so I think our partners at TCSG and USG have, they have just as many, accolades coming their way for the work that they do as we do. So, it's a collaboration, and we're working together to make sure that we create every opportunity for our kids to be successful.
You mentioned trade schools. I was actually going to ask you about that. What is your opinion? And I think you have a background in this, actually, but what is your opinion of trade schools here in Georgia as an alternative for some students to a more traditional university?
Oh, I think it's a necessary alternative. I think without it, we wouldn't be that leader in the nation when it comes to workforce development. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at the labor market and see that the labor market just simply cannot sustain the employment of 100% of its people with four-year college degrees. They're just not out there. The fastest part of the labor force as far as growing are those areas that require 2 years degree. So 80% of the jobs out there for young people that are graduating from our schools require some type of training beyond high school, at least 2 years. But our goal is to help children determine what kind of training and how much. Is it technical? Is it university? Is it research? Is it 2 years? Is it 4 years? All that depends. And that's what I see our role is helping students find that and focus in on that so they're not wasting time. I've always said that college is the most expensive career development program there is. We just can't afford for kids to go off to college to find something that they're interested in doing. We can do a better job helping them find that before they get there and making sure they're ready for it when they do. So absolutely, it is an absolute necessity to have those technical schools.
You know, Dr. Barge, in the business I'm in is a very esoteric business. It's the electronic motor drive business, variable frequency drives. And we send people out to work on sell, install devices that vary the speed of electric motors. Very technical type field. We have a very, very difficult time. Even in this unemployment as high as it is, when we get ready to hire a technician, we have a very hard time finding one because the competition for those guys is very is quite severe, and it's not uncommon to hire one and have him hired away from you. And I try to tell that to kids that I'm around that when they're considering what to do after high school, to at least consider if you would like to perhaps work in the trades, because there absolutely are jobs there. And you know what else? I don't know that a lot of people realize this. If you take a fellow that comes out of a trade school and he's good at what he does, and in addition to a trade school, he's also a person that learns how to deal with customers, learns how to do business, so to speak. And after he learns that trade, he then starts a business having to do with that trade. His income potential is up there with anybody's. He's not taking a backseat to anyone in terms of income. And I really do think that, at least in the area I live in, that trade schools are sort of an overlooked, very viable alternative to some folks for. And that's not to denigrate a four-year college degree. I'm actually sort of a hybrid. I have a trade school degree and a four-year college degree. So I sort of got the best of both worlds there.
Right. And I think you hit the nail on the head as far as many of these jobs are very well-paying jobs. I remember visiting one of our high schools in the metro area that has a tremendous welding program in their high school.
Right.
And they had a partnership with a business and industry in their community that was continually coming to the school and asking for employees, asking for young people coming out of the welding program. And they were hiring these high school students at entering at $20 an hour as a welder. Now, you may say, well, you can't plan on that for a career, but I'm sorry. I think that as a society, we have for so long degraded the trades as a viable occupation and career that we have this tremendous skills gap, where that we've talked for so long about how to get into a corner office that we forgot how to build one.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Hey, to that point, the New York Supreme Court recently, now just sort of off the cuff here, threw out a case where 9 graduates of the New York School of Law, they sued the school for their tuition to be returned because they said the school inflated the job prospects after they got out. Now, lawyer jokes aside, you know, about lawyers suing lawyers, but in light of what we're talking about, does higher education bear any responsibility for graduates that, in essence, are not prepared for the marketplace?
Well, I don't know that I could say that. I think that higher education should look more responsibly at how they guide their students. I think that we should look more at let's look at the data. Let's look at the job market. You know, what are the areas of growth as far as occupation, and what are the needs in the future? And if there's not a tremendous need for a particular type of program or student, well, is it responsible to continue turning out graduates with degrees in that program where there aren't necessarily a lot of employment options? Or at least let's make sure that we communicate to students, you know, you need something else to rely on too.
I think that's a trick. I think if someone wants to study whatever, that's fine. They've got the money to do it. Great. But yeah, at least tell them. You know, Dr. Barge, I was raised in a family, and I would assume you share the same value. I was raised in a family where education is a value in and of itself, aside from the economics of it. There is intrinsic value in being educated, and so I don't totally go off the cliff on the, you know, school is just for a job thing. I mean, I think there is something to be said for just having an educated populace, and there's something to be said just for the quality of your life. Being an educated person, which, I mean, in my case, means to continue to learn as we all get older.
Absolutely. One thing that I learned very early is that education is the great equalizer. That, you know, having grown up in a poor home, in a family where there had never been a college, a person to go to college, I saw education as the means to better myself and better my life for my family when I had a family. And education levels that playing field so that it doesn't matter when a kid goes to school, you know, where he comes from, how much money his parents have or don't have, what color he is, or none of that matters, because when you go through the doors of a school, you have the exact same opportunity as every other child to learn and to be and become whatever you want to. And that's the great thing about education, is it absolutely levels the playing field for everyone involved.
And really, that's the great American dream that we all have admired for so long, is the idea, no matter what your background is, this is America.
Right.
And if you just work hard, you know, you have the same shot anyone else does. Let me ask you, some of the changes that are taking place. I actually have been to a high school recently. I'm amazed. And I don't mean this negatively at all. I'm sort of amazed at the amount of technology and the amount of reliance on technology that's there now. Do you see any downside at all to that, or is that all good?
Well, if there's a downside, I would say that that would probably come in the area of being too overly reliant on technology. I don't think technology is necessarily the silver bullet, let's say. I think it is a tool and a resource that we use to engage students. Our students today are technology natives. You put a pencil and a paper in their hands and it's almost a foreign object. And so the technology engages them, but if you rely on technology, then it's, you know, you're going to have an issue. They still need us to help them see what information is valid, what information is reliable, and how do I use that information to become successful. You know, with technology, they don't necessarily need us for information. They could probably get the answer to a question quicker than we can ask it. But they do need us for that other piece. You know, how is this going to help me be successful, and how do I use it, and is it reliable, is it valid?
And I think the whole point is to make sure that it's a tool, a tool to get to a means. It's not the actual means. We're talking with Dr. John Barge. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield, and we'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We are talking with Dr. John Barge, the head of the Georgia Department of the Georgia State School Superintendent. We have a great guest, and we appreciate him being here. Dr. Barge, Fox Business had on their website had a very interesting little story on there about that the enrollment in colleges had declined very slightly. However, the enrollment in online courses had increased fairly substantially. We were talking about technology right before the break, and that is one of the trends I think you do see now, even in colleges. There's this acronym, but I have not been familiar with until recently, until one of my daughters told me about it. The massive open online courses, and a lot of colleges are offering those now. I'm curious, do you think those will continue to happen, or is that a temporary trend, or is that a long term trend?
Now, I think you'll continue to see those. I think there'll be a little scrutiny placed on the quality of those online courses, but I certainly think it's a trend that will continue because it does open up opportunities for non-traditional students to further their education and to earn a new skill, learn a new skill. Almost like in the day when I was in college and seeking my degrees, you would go to class at night and work during the day.
Right.
It's colleges and universities looking to meet the needs of students where they are.
You know, I got my slide rule out several weeks ago and showed it to my grandkids. And of course, they had no clue what that was.
I imagine not.
Yeah, they think you're like from ancient Rome or something, sure. Something like that.
But they're probably amazed at how well it works, though.
You know, I always tell them we went to the moon using that thing, so, you know, it worked just fine.
That's right.
Dr. Barge, tell us just a little bit about your background and your upbringing here in Georgia.
I've been in Georgia my entire life. My family actually settled in Georgia in the late 1700s, so our family's been here for a long time. I attended public school in Cobb County, and again, as I said earlier, didn't have, we weren't the wealthiest family on the block, and, you know, we learned, I was the youngest in a big family, and you basically started working when you could, and you just did what you had to do, and we were of that type that you didn't accept anything from anyone that you didn't work for, and so you pulled yourself up by your bootstraps. And So I attended college on scholarships. I got to choose where I went to college. I had scholarships to a bunch of different schools, and chose Berry College in Rome, and was really glad I did. And ever since then, Rome has been my home. I've been there for almost 30 years, fell in love with the place up there, and earned my master's and specialist degrees and my doctorate degree, going to school at night, paid cash for them, never borrowed money. And education really has leveled the playing field, and it opened up opportunities for me that a lot of folks never get to experience. And I'm very glad that I had that opportunity.
Dr. Barge, you had a very successful teaching career and an administration career. What made you decide to get into the political side of education?
Well, it was probably when I left being a high school principal and I came to the State Department as the State Director of Career and Technical Education, I saw, the additional side of education that I had not seen before, which was that policymaking side. And what I saw at the time was, you know, there were a lot of decisions made for education that impacted children by policymakers that had never worked in a classroom before.
Right.
And so they didn't understand how those policies impacted children. and teachers. And so I began to think then, well, you know.
By the way, you know, that is a huge argument that many of us in business have about people in politics, too, is that they're making things that affect us in business. They've never owned one. We're like, hey, put somebody, think this through a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of how I wound up here.
You have a very, as I said, a very successful history, not only in teaching, but in school administration. Dr. Barge, what, if anything, has surprised you about being the state school superintendent? Pleasantly or unpleasantly, I guess.
Well, pleasantly, I would say the zeal and determination of most of our teachers to do what's best for children, in spite of everything that is thrown at them in the way of policy and budget cuts and things like that. You know, I would say unpleasantly, I would have to say the politics side of the house and the number of people who make decisions that really aren't based on what's in the best interest of children.
Yeah, I think we would all agree with you on that. Speaking of that, if you had the absolute power, I mean, if we made you king in Georgia for a year, what if anything would you, if you could change anything you wanted to about public education here in Georgia, what would that be?
I think that I would try to change the perception that some people have that rigor simply means more of something. Almost kind of the same idea. Well, if two aspirin is good for me, you know, if two aspirin are good for me, then maybe four would be better. The same model doesn't fit every child.
Right.
And, you know, we are right now are expecting the same thing from every child in this state in order to earn a high school diploma. And while that sounds good, that's one of those things that sounds really good in theory. But in practice, we're losing a lot of children, and it's because they can't do the things that they're really interested in, because we're making them all fit into the same mold.
And, you know, I think any of us that have been parents that have had more than one child immediately recognize, or we learn pretty quickly, what worked with one child does not necessarily work with another. What motivates one child to do things does not motivate the other one. And you know, when we put them in the school arena, that doesn't change at all.
Right. So if I could change one thing, it would be help people understand that every child is different. And what it takes to make that child successful is not going to be the same.
Let me ask you this. Do you see anything coming, or do you foresee anything in the future of public education that maybe we'd be surprised to, that's going to surprise us?
Oh my goodness.
I guess technology would be one area, one way you could go. I'm assuming we're probably going to see more and more of that, I think.
Yeah, and I think that there is a growing acceptance of outside of the box or non-traditional thinking along the lines of things, let's say, like the Carnegie Unit and seat time and those things that have so governed our model of education over the years that maybe we don't necessarily have to keep children in a seat for, you know, X number of hours before we give them credit. Maybe with technology we can give a student an assessment, and if they perform well on this assessment, we give them credit for that course, and we just move them to the next level. And so that enables us to move children at their pace rather than our pace, moving everybody at one time.
Dr. Barge, at the end of your life, and we have 1 minute, what do you want to be remembered for? If I'm writing your epitaph here, what do you want to be remembered for?
Oh my goodness. As a passionate supporter of public education and the fact that maybe, that I had an impact and changed the lives of children for the better.
Well, I think you have done that, and I appreciate you coming on the program today. You've been a great guest. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. It was an honor to be with you.
Well, thank you. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, streaming live on biz1190.com, podcasting on Eddie Mayfield.com. We're glad you joined us. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.